Hi, I'm Andrew Rich, and if you're like me, you look at the state of modern wrestling discourse and think, wow, what a cesspool. That's why I'm here to tell you about Music of the Mat Remix. That's right, your favorite wrestling music podcast is back with a new format, where I bring on a guest and we play songs related to wrestling-themed topics. It could be a wrestling reference, a wrestling concept, a wrestling pun, things of that nature. Now you might be saying, Andrew, that is a very, very tenuous connection to pro wrestling on a wrestling podcast network. Is this just an excuse to hang out with your friends and talk about music and ignore the rest of the wrestling landscape? Yes. Yes, it is. So listen to Music of the Mat Remix on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network, available on Apple, Spotify, or your podcast player of choice.
My name is Tyler Fornes, and I am one of the co-hosts of The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy AEW podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. We take a broad scope approach to the world of All Elite Wrestling and the entire universe of Tony Khan. We talk about the big matches, the big stars, the promos, the storylines, and we also look at it from a big picture perspective. How are things going to change over the course of the next 10 years with AEW still in the picture? How are companies like WWE going to adapt and adjust to AEW? Are they going to be a similar way like they did with WCW in the late 1990s? Will there be a counterpunch? We talk about all of that and more on The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy every week on the Voices of Wrestling Network.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Here we go!
You're listening to the Emerald Flow Show on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
Welcome to episode 88 of the Emerald Flow Show. We're a podcast on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. You can follow us on Blue Sky and X at Emerald Flow Show. You can listen to us on all of your favorite podcast apps and leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. And if you're feeling generous, you can donate to the show at voicesofwrestling.com/donate. I'm Gerard. Back with Paul. And Paul, I suppose this week it's going to be a little different in our format. We don't really have any much All Japan to talk about, so we're going to sprinkle in some other companies.
Yeah, I mean, basically we literally just have like one talking about All Japan, because they literally in the last 2 weeks ran zero shows.
So just quickly, we'll get that out of the way. Some stuff on Yuma Anzai, or speculation on Yuma Anzai. I read the translated interview of Anzai on Michelle's ProRes translation blog, which is a great resource if you're not familiar with it, for lots of interviews in Puro. And upon reading it, I think he's actually doing like a movie or a TV, which also sort of gels with what Fukuda has been having the wrestlers do. He's been getting the movie roles and stuff like that. So that makes the most sense, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Like I was kind of thinking that he was maybe going to do a Europe tour, but I feel like if he was doing that, he would have popped up already, right? Because he's only gone for 2 months and we're already kind of like in mid-July already. So like there's not that much time left for him. Like I actually went to the GWF show on Sunday. I was kind of low-key expecting him to pop up there and he didn't. Jack Morris was on it, but he wasn't. So with, and he also didn't pop up anywhere else. So yeah, I definitely feel like a movie seems like the most likely thing, because otherwise, like if he was injured or whatever, he would just say that he's injured and he's just out for 2 months, right? So like he has to be doing something. And the fact that it seems like nothing visible, like seems like, yeah, most likely it's like a movie. So everybody's under NDA, so we won't know until it's like, until they like wrapped up the shooting and everything.
Yeah, I mean, I figured, so he made the thing he would start on July 1st on his absence. And I figured, okay, on July 1st, 2nd, or 3rd, or whatever, he'd tweet out a bunch of like dates if he was wrestling elsewhere. But that never came. So got a little suspicious. Now, my crazy idea, and this is pure 100% speculation, but I was like, maybe he got married and had a honeymoon. They would not reveal that their like 26-year-old future ace, who's a handsome young man, is getting married.
Yes. Now. That they're also doing a bunch of like yaoi baiting with as well.
Yeah.
So yeah, so, no, definitely not that they're gonna reveal that he's married. No. Like it's gonna come out in like 10 years, like that he has like 2 kids or whatever.
So but that's 100% pure speculation on my part. I was just trying to think of like where he was, but filming a movie or maybe even a TV show, it's the most scenario and also fits in with what the company has been doing, right? Kento
and
had that
timing as well, right?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, honeymoon is what, but like, you really go on your honeymoon for 2 months? That's a long time. That's a big
honeymoon. You know, like some time off or whatever for that.
Yeah.
I that was just speculation on my part. So before we get in, I'm just going to do a quick one match recommendation from Big Japan on June 25th in Sapporo in Penny Lane 24, which actually looks a lot like Shinkiba First Ring. The main event of Daichi Hashimoto and Hideyoshi Kamatani versus Masato Tanaka and Yuya Aoki. Pretty good little match there. Worth checking out, even with the truly bizarre camera angle that Big Japan was using for that show, which is sort of like a single cam shot, but also very tilted upwards, but not quite a bird's eye view. Although they claim.
The one. They used that in Kurikan, where they basically shot the show from like, they used that. Did you ever watch the Daisuke Sakamoto versus Jeff Cobb match?
Oh, yes.
That had kind of, right, because they filmed that from like the balcony in Kurikan. It looked really weird.
So that match is on Core right now. They've uploaded a couple of shows since the Strong Climb Finals, but that was the only match that I thought looked of any interest, and I haven't gone through it all. There was like some other stuff, but it hasn't been uploaded yet that happened at the end of June. But yeah, I'm trying to like pay attention to Big Japan now again. I don't know.
Well, you still can.
Yeah. We'll talk about this later, but I think there's one company in the bigger shitter than Big Japan.
Oh, absolutely.
So we move on then to DDT with their Rock and Ring 2025 Play the Strikes, Shout the Cheers from yesterday, July 13th at Corken Hall. DDT still not giving attendances, but this looked pretty full because Kaisi Takechi was back on the show in the semi-main event. Paul, how much of the show did you see?
The top three matches. So the Universal, the six-man, and the KOD,
Well, I would say the top four matches are the only thing that really bother talking about, except I will say that in the dark match, Naomi Yoshimura has gotten himself into tremendous shape, quite possibly the best shape of his career, I think.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I will be looking forward to if they actually push him, but he's been working like opening match duty upon since his return.
Yeah, that's rarely like, I mean, it depends, right? Like, if you've been out for a while, they kind of put you there, but you know, eventually you want to move out of that. But I mean, if he got himself in good shape, I think at least that would be a sign they want to do something with him, right?
Yeah, I would hope so. So Chris Brooks, Jun Akiyama, and Daichi Sato defeated Yuki Ino, Yuki Onaya, and Yuki Ishida in 8:29 with a frog splash from Sato on Ishida. They seemed to be high on Sato, and that was a solid little match. And then the three-way match of Super Sasanaga Machine versus Denshoku Dino and Kazuki Harada went 4:19. with Machine winning with a schoolboy in Harada. And then we got the announcement that Muscle Sakai will be facing Minoru Suzuki at one of the Peter Pan nights in the 50th anniversary of the Muscle Sakai retirement. And Dino will be facing Hiroshi Tanahashi on the second night of Peter Pan in Korakuen Hall on August 31st. They're doing two nights of Peter Pan this year. One in, what was it called? Hinashita Arena in Tokyo on the 30th, and then at Korakuen Hall on the 31st. So they're sort of spreading everything over. But we'll get into some of the other matches on that show coming up. Special six-man tag match, Mao Cannon with Kimihiro and Kazuma Sumi defeated Masashi Takeda Illusion and Hirotu Sakuraba in 11-10 with the Japanese leg roll clutch hold from Mao on Illusion. This was really good. I continue to be impressed by Sakuraba, who's the other sort of celebrity. I think he's like some sort of actor or stunt man. He's come into DDT, worked some matches. Unlike Kaize Takeshi, he's like a mean looking big guy, but his power moves look really good. So he's, I think, if he wanted to be a pro wrestler full time, I think he'd do pretty well for himself. So that was probably like
He's the guy with the big arms, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
That was the best of the undercard matches, I thought. And then we're getting into the sort of the top half of the card territory. So a special tag match. Kosei Fujita and Takashi Masada defeated Toi and Yuya Kuroku in 12-22 with the Masada no Chikar Kobu Muki Vom from Masada on Kuroku, which is a Michinoku driver, or the figure four Michinoku driver, samurai driver. This was really good. I actually thought the best part of the matches were the Fujita and the Toi exchanges. I would say that very charismaless void of Toi stepped up here. No. I mean, he's a solid wrestler, but he's not particularly dynamic or anything.
No, he's not.
But, but I thought he looked good. I mean, Fujita looked great, right? And working with Toi really made Toi look good. And then after the match, Chris Brooks came out and harassed Fujita with a puppet. I was like, what's the story behind this puppet? It looks like a Muppet, like something you'd see on Sesame Street. And apparently Brooks just bought it drunk one night online. And I'm like, well, that's a good enough story for DDT.
I mean, it's kind of how he ended up there, right?
Yes. And then Zack Sabre Jr. came out to a big, but not massive pop for the IWGP World Heavyweight Champion. And then, I don't know, they chased Masada and Brooks around the ring a bit. And then Fujita got the puppet and then threw it across the ring back, across the ring back at Brooks and everything. And so we're getting Fujita and Masada versus Fujita and ZSJ on the August 30th Peter Pan show, mm-hmm. which, I mean, I think it will probably be one of the matches of the weekend.
Oh, yeah. No, that one has a chance to be really good if everybody's motivated.
Yeah, for sure. DDT Universal title. Minoru Suzuki defeated Shinya Aoki in 15-17 via referee stop. Now, here's the thing. I don't know. This match went too long. And
yeah.
I just think that's too long for Suzuki these days. They had to fill the match by brawling a whole bunch,
mm-hmm.
which in the crowd. Now, to be fair to Aoki, he got some cuts on his back, and he took his spills into the chairs and everything. But I don't know, like the last couple minutes with the submissions was fine, not bad. And then he got the win with the referee stop, like the elbows to the head and everything like that. So a decent little finish, but it just dragged on, and I don't know.
Yeah, I wasn't a big fan
of Suzuki now that it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
But Mao's going to challenge Suzuki at Peter Pan, which I assume Mao's going to win.
I mean, he should. Yeah, definitely.
Yes. God. Yeah. And I'm very curious what Mao can get out of Suzuki.
Yeah, these days, that's the thing. Like a couple of years ago, that I would be like, yeah, that's going to be a really good match these days. I don't know, but like if they do a bit more brawling, I think that might work better with Mao, because Mao is actually kind of pretty decent at Plunder.
Yeah.
So I could maybe see that be a bit better. I actually have to say, like for this match, like the thing that came to my mind was like, I actually like the like preview tag match that they did at the like previous like Korakuen show. You know, the one that had like Higuchi versus Brooks.
Oh, yeah, yeah, right.
Like that preview tag, I liked more than I liked the actual like title match here. Because I thought that was much more intriguing. You had like Suzuki kind of getting choked out and everything. And here, yeah, it was just kind of blah. I don't know. Like, I think especially because these guys, like this one, I actually would have been happier if they had just stuck to like mat work, really. Which I do think both of them are good at. Like, I don't get why they had to like resort to the brawling. They could have just done like a grappling match and just left it at that and maybe cut off like 5 minutes. And I think it would have been perfectly good. But yeah, this for me, like in the middle, it just dragged like so badly. And yeah, just wasn't a big fan of it.
So special six-man tag match, Yuki Ueno, Akito, and Kaisi Takechi defeated Daisuke Sasaki, Hideki Okatani, and MJ Paul of everyone's favorite unit, Damnation TA, in 11:40 with the BME from Ueno on Paul. Now, of all of Takechi's like six-man tags, there have been some really good ones, but I thought this was the weakest because you had Sasaki and Paul in there. But my God, that Takechi flying spring swan dive forearm, that is duty though.
Oh yeah, no, like he is, like
AJ Styles,
he's another guy though. Sure. Yeah, no, he's another guy where it's like if he wanted to be full-time, you know, like what I've seen of him, like he seems to be a natural, really.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, it was still a fine little match, but you know, you had the Damnation TA being Damnation,
yeah,
in the middle of this, although it was kept relatively short. And it wasn't bad. I just think it's the weakest of the Takechi matches that he's had so far.
But he's over like crazy with the crowd, though.
Of course. Yeah. That's why they filled up Corkin, probably.
Yeah. I mean, but to be fair, I feel like the Higuchi versus Brooks Corkin and also looked like it had like good attendance. It's just we can't compare the two because we don't know what either of them drew.
Yeah. And then main event for the KOD Openweight title, Kazusada Higuchi defeated Hiroshima in 16:55 with the brain claw slam to make his first defense of the title. I went 4 stars on this. I thought it was great, but not like outstanding match of the year level. I think if we had this like 2-3 years ago, even it would be better. I would say that Hiroshima, if we go like peak Hiroshima out of 10, he's like still an 8. But mind you, this man is 51 years old, so he's still an incredible pro wrestler at 51 years old, and this was still a great match, though. I just think it wasn't quite as dynamic as I was sort of expecting, but I mean, it was still very hard-hitting and, you know, great finishing sequence, teasing Hiroshima win, and then Higuchi just locking in that claw.
Yeah, I think I actually liked this a lot more. Like, I'm honestly debating between, like, 4.25 and 4.5. Like, I thought this was really, really good. I agree that it's not peak Hiroshima anymore, but like I constantly keep makes sense because I think he kind of started around the same time. Like I constantly keep putting him into like the same like cohort as like guys like Marufuji, for example. And then I keep forgetting. It's like, no, he's much older than Marufuji. And he's in so much better shape than Marufuji is.
Like, yeah, you worked a pretty wild style too.
Exactly. That's the thing. Like, it's not like he was taking it easy. He was literally the guy like carrying like the work rate side of like DDT for like, I mean, at this point, like close to like a quarter of a century, which is insane. So, but I thought this was still really, really good. Like, I thought the structure was just, like, done really well, where it's just, Higuchi's just this monster, and you could just get, like, very brief, like, Hiroshima, like, hope spots before, like, Higuchi just, like, reasserts his dominance. And, like, that finish was just a thing of beauty. You know, like that's literally, like, a serial killer finish, is what they did here. But, like, Hiroshima gets, like, the pin, and, like, he gets, like, the very close near fall. But then as Higuchi's kicking out, he just grabs Hiroshima, like just muscles him up and just hits the claw slam immediately and pins him for the win. Like that I think that was my favorite finish of the year so far. Like that was just completely awesome. So yeah, I get where you're coming from. Like, it maybe wasn't like peak Hiroshima, but I think like what they did still worked so well that for me, like I just thought it was like, maybe it might be getting towards like the bottom half of my top 10 for the end of the year. I'm going to have to see how it actually shakes out, but it definitely will be in consideration.
And then after the match, Drew Nakayama came out to challenge and he even decked Higuchi, and Higuchi sold it like he got knocked out and was like all groggy and everything like that. So what's going to happen is on the August 30th, it's going to be Higuchi versus Akiyama. And then on the 31st, it'll be the winner of that match versus the winner of a battle royal on July 16th at one of the Beer Garden shows. So it's going to be back-to-back title defenses, which I dislike as a booking thing, yeah. But it's DDT and everything like that. Also in August, before Peter Pan, there's going to be another, I can't remember what the match format is, but it's going to be like one of those right to challenge anywhere, anytime things. So be mindful of that at Peter Pan too.
I don't know. I just hope they give Higuchi like a big long reign.
Yeah, I suspect he'll come out of Peter Pan still the champ.
Yeah. I feel like this feels like his big long-term reign, to be honest.
Yeah,
like
for sure.
Beating Hirashima as the first defense and then immediately going to Akiyama, you know, it's like it's two guys you can't. Like, basically, you like establish that like he's going to get a run and you don't have to like give up any of the young guys. Like, you don't have to like, you know, like you don't have to do like, you know, end of defense like early on or like Mao or whatever that you probably want to like save for like in a couple of months or whatever. That's when you want to do those matches. You don't want to do them right away.
Yeah. So that's good because I think DDT has been one of the underrated companies of 2025 because you've got Higuchi back in the mix and then you've got the Astronauts, or you had the Astronauts with their tag title reign.
Yeah, I actually talked about that on shameless plug on the half year award show on Wrestling Omakase, where I voted DDT as like the number three promotion of the year because like it's just incredibly solid what they do. Like even before like Higuchi came back, I think, you know, like they've just quietly just kind of done like a really well job and they don't really get talked about all that much. But like it's whenever I like tune into DDT, I'm never like, I never really walk away like I wasted my time, basically.
Well, sometimes I feel like that. Like what I will do is I'll put the undercard on in the background and then maybe like halfway through the show start really paying attention.
Yes, I mean, but that's always been the case with DDT.
Because DDT shows start early in my time zone, like often, like this started at 10:30 at night, right? And often, like, you know, even their big shows will be in the afternoon. Bigger than Korakuen shows will be in the afternoon. So it's just like, and then it's like, I look up and then I see Super Sasadango Machine doing a PowerPoint presentation. I'm like, okay, well, you know.
Yeah.
Back to whatever else I'm doing for like another hour, whatever.
And then you can, when you see like Ueno coming out, it's like, okay, time to pay attention.
Yeah. And then one other big note here, before the show started, a new rookie was unveiled who will be making his debut on August 30th, and that is Hinata Kasai. And yes, that's right. That is the son of Jun Kasai. Now, look, I'm just going to be blunt with this. Would you say that Japanese professional wrestling is the least nepotistic of all professional wrestling anywhere in the world?
Well, it's in some ways, yes, but it's more so because the sons are always kind of bad. Like, there is a lot of nepotism going on because a lot of these guys only have spots because of who their dad is. Like, there's no way they still would be like hanging around. I mean, and also, if we're talking about nepotism, we just need to look at the largest Japanese promotion where a guy has been, like, getting a push and potentially, I don't know. I know people are saying that, like, the promotion has given up on him. I don't believe that. I think he might be winning the G1. Like, Shota Umino is where he is because his dad is the head ref. So,
yeah,
it's...
maybe.
American wrestling is worse. Pushing people to the top because of who their dad is.
To be fair, though, if you looked at young Shota, like when he was following Mox around and everything like that, you're like, that's a guy you want to get behind.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It's just that, like,
it's not in the last 3 years or whatever. He's not a Leona.
No. He's not that bad. No. Absolutely not. Like, people kind of go a bit over the top when it comes to Shota Umino. But, like, yeah, he's, like, there's way worse, like, nepotism cases. Like, I'd argue, like, he's also, like, better than, like, Daichi Hashimoto was early on. Like, Hashimoto has gotten better, but, like, early on, he was, like, really rough.
Yes. Daichi Hashimoto is a perfectly solid wrestler. Like, what I was saying, in, like, for that Big Japan match I watched, his, like, house show effort is, like, pretty good these days. Like, remember Champion Carnival 2019 when he was just a lazy bum?
Oh, God, yeah.
You know. So his default has greatly improved, but I guess we'll have I will sort of bracket this out that right now Dragon Gate is really experimenting with the Suns.
Yeah.
But that remains to be seen because none of them obviously have stepped up to be like main, like, you know.
And I mean, I will say, I mean, Mochizuki Jr. is absolutely somebody you can't like. I mean, nepotism, yes, but also he's really, really, really fucking good.
Yeah.
So, although, you know, I mean.
So remains to be seen with like Strong Machine J and all that and Ishin.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I will just say, I was thinking about this yesterday and I'm like, well, I think technically Katsuyori Shibata is the most successful second generation wrestler in Japan.
Off the top of my head, yeah, I'm trying to think of somebody else that is like a really obvious second generation guy. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a fair statement. Unless I'm forgetting someone really obvious.
Very, very different than the United States or Mexico.
Oh no. I mean, Mexico is by far the most nepotistic. Like that's like nepotism is like literally like a key carrying pillar of like Lucha.
And then what's interesting in the States is that a lot of the sons have surpassed their, or and daughters have surpassed their parents.
Yeah. Yeah.
In that startup too. Level, right? I mean, yeah, you know, Randy Orton, as much as it's easy to bag on him, he's a bigger star than his dad.
Cowboy Bret Bob Hart, Orton. Yes.
Bret Hart, even. Although the wrestling business was very different when Stu Hart was a wrestler, but still, you know, and you could go on about that. You know, you can go on and on.
I'm trying to think about Europe right now, but there aren't too many like guys that really broke out. It's like the obvious one that I'm thinking of is obviously like Axel Dieter Jr. Because his dad was like an actual like I mean that again like depends how you measure success, right? Because Axel Dieter Sr. was like obviously like a really big local legend, and his son like managed to like go to the US or whatever, but it's not like he's had like a blowaway career in WWE. So
yeah,
it's a bit of a tough one. Then and Zack Sabre Jr. is a fake junior. Like there is no Zack Sabre Sr. So he doesn't count. And then I'm trying to think if I'm forgetting anybody else that's like a second generation guy in Europe. Probably somebody I'm forgetting, but yeah. Yeah, in Europe, it's more of a case that there just aren't really many like second generation guys. So I guess by default, then from like the bigger markets, it wins compared to by just not having any. but yeah, I kind of get your point because yes, it's definitely much more of a case of like in Lucha, it's like if you don't have like any kind of nepotism, it's even if you're really talented, it's going to be really hard to get anywhere. And in the US, if you have like a dad who was in the business. Like, that's basically, like, that's at least going to get you a push to the mid-card and potentially to, like, a title at least. Whereas in Japan, it gets your roster spot and sometimes not even with... I mean, Leona is a really good example, right? Like, try and find a bigger legend than, you know, like, his dad. And he still only manages to, like, get on, like, indie shows because he's bad.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that is DDT. I think in DDT Kasai will have a decent shot, and he'll sink or swim on his talent.
Yeah, that actually made me realize that I forgot that like just like Hirashima, Jun Kasai is one of those guys that is much older than I always think he is. It's like Jun Kasai is also 50, so yeah, it makes sense that he actually has a son that is now wrestling. It's kind of crazy to think about.
Yeah, I would suspect. We might be seeing because this is not the trend, right? I expect we'll see some more kids, and you know, with Dragon Gate and everything, maybe 5-10 years from now, it will be a very different scene, and you won't want to have a parent that was a famous wrestler.
Yeah, I mean, who knows how Suwama's son's like football career is going?
Yes, that's
because I feel like whenever that one is over, he just has like an automatic like entry ticket to the All Japan Dojo. It just has to show up.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like soccer is not the best sport to become a pro wrestler.
Better than basketball.
Maybe. All right. So that's DDT. And so there's a lot to look forward there. Okay. So now we'll go back to our more regularly scheduled programming. And we got a few NOAH shows to begin. So we begin with. We begin with Wrestle Magic 2025 on June 30th at Shinagawa Prince Hotel Stellar Ball. They didn't do an attendance for this, but this place only held, I think, like 750 or something when I was looking it up.
So I mean, it didn't look empty. I will say that.
Yeah.
But it's definitely a notable step down from last year's Wrestle Magic. I don't think anybody can deny that. Like to go from
Wrestle Magic last year
to this. A in size of venue, but also B in terms of show quality. This was not nearly as good as last year's Wrestle Magic.
I'd also argue that this did feel that special.
No,
it really had a difference and
felt like a house show plus.
Yeah. Barely, you know, it's just like,
yeah,
but I feel like the way that Nosawa tried to hype it up.
Oh, he tried his damnedest to like hype this one up. Yeah.
Yeah. So we begin with the opening matches is Kenno, Kenten, Ukusasaki defeating Masaki Mochizuki, Shuji Kano, and Titus Alexander at 8:13 with the horizontal cradle from Kenta on Alexander. And this needed some more time to cook, you know. But I mean, it was fine for what it was, but I was just left like, oh, come on.
Yeah, with these three guys, you go under 10 minutes. Come on, that's criminal.
And then next was Miyuki Takase and Mika Iwata defeating Great Sakuya and Johnny Robbie in 10:30 with the Rayon from Iwata on Robbie. Mika Iwata actually pinning somebody and not getting pinned. But I thought, again, this was, it was good. But again, I will give Sakuya more props for toning the character down because I thought she looked really good here. And I am starting to get into Great Sakuya.
Okay. Yeah, it was solid. Yeah, I mean, it was solid. I thought it was kind of nothing special. I liked it more than the previous match because, I mean, it just got that little bit more time to kind of cook a little bit more. With Great Sakuya, yeah, she's definitely not as, like, because she was really, like, the character was really bad early on. Like, and now I think it's kind of found, like, a good equilibrium where, like, the match quality is, like, okay now. But it's still not, I don't know, it's still not like somebody I'm like, oh, they definitely need to like keep this character around. Because now I'm also like, well, why is she here? Because it also doesn't seem like they built this, like, I thought the goal was to like build this like GHC women's title around her eventually. But that doesn't appear to be the case. So I don't know, like, what's this character for now, basically.
Yeah, for sure. And then we had a three-way match, Yohei defeating Amasaka and Archie Cole when Yohei pinned Cole with the dropkick. Again, only 7 minutes, a solid little match. And, I have become a Archie Cole guy. But, you know, there's not much more to say about it.
Yeah. I gave him the number three spot on my, like, rookie of the year list. So. Mm.
And then for the GHC Hardcore title, Hayata defeated Shuji Ishikawa. I laugh every time I see that. 13:03 with the modified cradle. And Ishikawa fails on the V3, and Hayata is the fourth champion in this new Hardcore title, or the second edition of the Hardcore title. Paul, this wasn't bad, and it blew my expectations away. I'm not giving it 4 stars or anything. I'm just saying. Somehow the plunder forced Hayata to, like, do things.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, he couldn't just do like his normal, like, boring, slow work. He had to actually, like, you know, use the weapons and everything. But, like, for me, I agree it's not as bad as it could have been. But, like I said, I just have not been a fan of these, like, hardcore title matches because to me, they're just like subpar bloodless death matches. So I just can't get into them.
Well, and they also have to, like, because you're, like, in a company like Noah, so it's, like, you really got to lead into the plunder. Like, just do the plunder for the sake of the plunder in ways that you don't even do in, like, a Big Japan death match, if that makes sense.
Yeah. There's no escalation. Yeah, there's no escalation of violence. Like, it's just kind of, you just have the weapons and you use them, and it doesn't escalate, really, to, like, that next level. And it also doesn't help that, like, because they're, like, Monday Magic exclusive, they also, like, just go away for, like, 6 months at a time, and then they bring them back.
Yeah, which is fine, because also, though, I don't want this title on regular Noah shows.
Yeah, you know what? Actually, that's fair. I'd rather also just, if it just stays in its own little world.
Yeah, that's fine. And so now we have, well, look, at this way, we know that Hayat is not going to be winning the junior title anytime soon, I think. That's fair to say?
Maybe. I don't know.
Well, I guess we'll find out, but I get that vibe. Then next up, Alpha Wolf, Dragon Bane, and Luis Monte defeated Galeno, Alejandro, and Kai Fujimura in 11:42 with the MCK from Monte on Fujimura. I would say this was one of the best matches of the show. It was just, you know, your go six man, perfect length at 11:42 and everything like that. So I thought that this was a nice palate cleanser.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, no, it's also very noticeable that like Mante has like a lot of experience working like these kind of six mans, obviously, like, you know, like because they do that in Dragon Gate very regularly. And I think he, actually him, Alpha Wolf and Bane make a really, really good trio. Like I would actually like to see them like work together like more regular, either Noah or in Dragon Gate, because I think like, I know, you know, like I think those three have like a really, really great like triple, like triangle gate reign in them.
Yeah, that's what I was going to bring up is, could they be in triangle gate territory? But
well, I mean, yeah, Mante just like... Mante just won the triangle gate, so like that's not going to happen. But
yeah, although when was the last time someone from Noah was in Dragon Gate? It's more like
that. No, like Alpha Wolf and Dragon Bane were just there. Like,
oh, were they?
Remember?
Okay.
Yeah, but the Dragon Bane got like, that's where he got the concussion.
Oh right. Okay. Yes. Yes. Okay. That makes sense. I was just thinking with because they were working with All Japan again.
Yeah.
But okay, that makes sense. And then semi-main event for the GHC Women's Championship. Takumi Iroha defeated Victoria Yuzuki in 13:04 with the running three. I thought this was a pretty solid match, although also very like dominant Iroha win. So, you know, like 3.5, 3.75 range. But I think this was just really just a setup, because after the match, Utami Hayashishida came out to challenge. And that's obviously where this title is going.
Yeah. Which I was like, okay, I was happy that it's now Iroha. So like, I mean, it was immediately obvious that, you know, like the quality of the title matches went up like significantly. Again, nothing blowy here, but solid. But yeah, to me, the most important thing is that like, yeah, that is actually going to have a chance of being an excellent match. Like that title match, I mean, whenever that, like, did they actually announce a date for it?
I don't so.
Because it would be a shame where like they set this up and it's not going to happen until like the next like season of Monday Magic.
Well, I don't know if it's necessarily happening in Noah, because Marigold, they've got a Sumo Hall show and I can't remember when it is. It might be October. And that feels like, given the Marvelous versus Marigold feud, that seems like something that you'd save for that, but maybe not. I don't know.
And you're not setting that up now if you're doing it in October. Like, you're not setting that up in July, like, not as the challenge. But, I mean, regardless of where it happens, I will watch it.
Yeah. I mean, that will be a great match.
Yeah.
And then for the main event, with all the multiple promotions, and Paul was only four, the fifth was just the card for the...
yeah.
I know, I thought that too. But as it turns out, that is... So anyway, you had Kaito Kiyomiya, Ryohei Oiwa returning to Noah, and Yuki Ueno and Yuki Yoshioka defeating Yoshihashi, Kai, Akito, and Daiki Inaba in 17:51. The Shining Lancer from Kiyomiya and Inaba. And my God, that losing team.
This is so unbalanced. You know. Like when, Jesus Christ. You might as well have named them Team Winner and Team Loser. Like, that's how on the nose this was.
Okay, Paul, sorry. Update. Mm-hmm. Utami versus Takumi, July 16th. Double title match.
Ooh, so that's in 2 days. Okay, yeah. That goes onto the watch list immediately. Like that's a live stream as well. Yeah, so that's.
So I'm trying to think. We got the Marigold versus Marvelous feud going on, and she just, I don't know. I think Iroha might be winning it all.
Yeah, and then you do the rematch like on the Sumo Hall show or whatever.
Yeah, that's, say what you will about Rossi Ogawa, but when he's in an intra-promotional feud, he will let the other company get big wins, even if they're smaller than him.
Yeah, which is smart, because then your guys, like, you push up the business. Like, yeah, maybe you look a little bit weak at first, but then your guys are going to come back on the big show and vanquish the bad guys, and that's how you get your heat back in an even bigger way. Like, yeah, you sacrifice, oh no, we lost on a Kurikan, but then we win on the Sumo Hall show, which...
yeah.
That's exactly how you do it. Like that, I mean, that's kind of how they did the Heisei Asian Gun like feud as well. You know, like that's just kind of like the UW, like on like the New Japan UWF feud, right? Where like New Japan won on the big show. That's where you win. Like, you give up stuff on the small show, then you win on the big show.
Well, New Japan barely gave up things on the small show.
yeah, fair.
But like, that's how not to book an interpromotional feud that runs out of steam relatively quickly.
Yeah.
So I kind of think Iroha will win that. But this match, I mean, it was a pretty good match. I think it probably was the best match of the show, even though I totally expected the team to win.
I mean, that's, yes. I mean, like, the moment they started, I was like, yeah, that, I was like, I'm going to, like, bet all of my money on the Kiyomiya team. Like, this is just so completely, like, hilariously unbalanced. I mean, if you're being technical, the loser team had two former world champions on it. But, like, yes. Come on. Kai and Daiki and Ava.
You know, they did a pretty good job of making Oiwa feel like a big deal.
Yeah.
Which is not something that New Japan has been doing very well lately.
Exactly. That's why my argument was, like, if he loses to Fale, but that was, like, before Fale, like, had to leave. I was like, if they put Fale over him, I was like, he should just jump back to Noah, because New Japan very obviously has no fucking idea what they're doing with him.
Yeah. So that was Wrestle Magic, which was, like, not a bad show, but I expected more from it, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, it was already, like, I mean, last year's was a pay-per-view and everything, right? But yeah. Still, like, I would have expected a bit more than just, like, a house show, essentially, with, like, a little bit of extra stuff and some fancy guests in the main event.
Yeah. So we go on to show for the 20th anniversary Shinjuku Face on July 5th in front of 403 fans. So I watched the first match of the show. I watched was Daiki Naba defeating Daiki Odashima in 1101 with the Katayo Passion Hold. Again, I'll always make time for, like, a Daiki Odashima match against a veteran. And, you know, it was a solid match. What can I say? To me, Odashima is the rookie of the year, and I just love watching all of his matches. And then I did Naomichi Marufuji, Will Cruz, and Amasaka, and Junta Miyawaki defeating Kaito Kiyomiya, Galeno, Alejandro, Kai Fujimura in 11:56 with the cruise control from Cruz on Alejandro, which is a solid little way to introduce Cruz. And then I did not watch Saxon Huxley and Hayata versus Manabu Soya and Yohei.
I did, unfortunately.
How was that?
Not very good, to be honest. It was kind of what you expected us to be. There was also, like, I don't know. It really was just there to, like, set up, like, Hayata and Yohei, and it was just boring otherwise.
And then Ozawa, Takashi Sugura, and Daga defeated Kenta and Oka Sasaki in 21:55 when Ozawa pinned Kenta with the Real Rebel. And with one exception that I'll talk about later, Paul, for a certain reason, I'm getting kind of bored of these Team 2000X six-mans on the house show.
Yeah, they're very similar.
Yeah. Now, this obviously had... I mean, it was fine, but then, you know, that takes over with Yoshi Tatsu. But yeah. You want to read anything to Ozawa pitting Kenno before their title match?
You think maybe that Kenno has a chance?
Yeah.
Maybe. I mean, they're also doing, like, a lot of, like, heavy stuff where it's like... I mean, to be fair, there's a lot of shots being traded back and forth, right? Like, where Kenno's like, oh yeah, I found Ozawa's, like, mother or whatever, and she says he's a loser. And then Ozawa's like, it's like, basically, it's like implying that, like, Kenno is a sub or whatever.
Well, so he put out a picture of a woman sitting on Kenno on all fours.
Yeah.
That was funny. I do like that. Ozawa's social media game. It's
yes. No. I feel like that's why I feel like maybe like with all of that social media, like I think it's more focused on that than like the actual matches. But I still don't see Kenno winning. Like,
well, to be fair, regardless of my feelings on Team 2000X, I think their willingness to push Ozawa hard, like even pitting his challenger before, says to me that I think Ozawa can still win because of how hard they're pushing him. And I think that's still the most likely scenario.
Because to me, like, I think he's holding the title for the rest of the year. Like, I think he's getting the full year and then loses it, like, January 1st.
If he does lose the title to Kenno, how much longer do you think Team 2000X exists?
I could see them, like, collapse pretty quickly. Like, I could actually see them maybe, like, reconstitute in, like, a different, like, heel faction. I could see them maybe, like, then, like, turning... I could almost see them turning, like, Ozawa face and, like, the fall, essentially.
Oh, that's what I was going to say. And then Ozawa chases as the face.
Yeah. And probably, I could see him win like the N1 or something, actually. Or maybe not the N1, but then, yeah, like actually, like I think regardless of if he keeps the title or not, I think he's in the title match January 1st either way.
Mm-hmm. For sure. I think we probably get an N1 announcements on this Corkin show.
Yeah, we should be. I mean we're the, getting close. Yeah.
And then the main event for the GHC Junior Heavyweight Tag Team Championship, Dragon Bane and Alpha Wolf defeated Tadasuke and Owada-san 16-13 with the Santa Maria from Bane on Owada-san. I'm still, it was good, but also fell victim to the Team 2000X format because it was a little different. You know, they ripped the masks. Mm-hmm. And, you know, whereas I'm expecting with Los Copadores, like the go thing. So yeah. I don't think this was necessarily their best work. It was solid. And I still, but I was going to say with this match, I'm still like, you know, buying my stock in Owada-san.
Oh, definitely. Like, I think somewhat getting kept back a little bit by the gimmick right now. But I think what you see of there, like his, like, otherwise, like his fundamentals, I think is still really good. I think we won't really see like what he can actually do until he like is like A, actually fully out of like young boy mode. And like he's like in a different gimmick essentially. And yeah, this match, that was actually my point as well with like the mask ripping and everything. Like, I think that also kept, like, Dragon Bane and Alpha Wolf, like more corrupt. Because you can't really do your flips all that well anymore if your mask is kind of, like, flapping around because it, like, impacts your vision a bit. So I think that also kind of, like, ground to, like, match to, like, a slower pace as well.
Yeah.
It wasn't bad. It's just, like, yeah, as you said, like, I'm so used to these guys just flying all over the place. And that just wasn't what this match was, and it was just, it was fine.
Yeah, and so that was that show. Paul, did you see anything on the 6th, July 6th show?
No, I did not see anything on that show, no.
It was very, very like, this is a Noah spot show.
Yeah. It was just, I looked at the card and I was like, I'm going to get to that later before we record, and then I never got around to it.
So then we jump to the 12th, at Yokohama Radiant Hall, and I watched 3 matches from the show because I wanted to see Junta Miyawaki defeat Calibus in 10 minutes with the Ippinanze style Falcon Arrow. And I got to say, Paul, I thought this was a very solid match. Did you see it?
Yeah, I wasn't really all that impressed, to be honest. I think Calibus is a bit sloppy.
I thought he was like a perfectly fine little mid-card guy.
Yeah, but to me it also feels like we've seen so many of these kinds of luchadores that get like a tour of Noah and then we just never see them again, so I'm like hesitant to invest any kind of attention in him until I know that he's actually gonna come back. And it's also like, he's also compared to most of the other luchadores that they bring in, he's a bit on the older side as well.
He is, yeah, he's like, in his 30s.
yeah so I don't know how much more like we're gonna get out of this guy. Like, not that it was bad, but I was just like, yeah. I thought it was a match where Junta was just very clearly the better worker as well.
Yeah, for sure. But it was something that Junta needed. And then the next match.
Oh yeah, for sure. That he actually got like an actual like dominant rather than like being like the like underdog like guy, right? Like that he actually got like
winning with
a win where he was very clearly the better guy, both in kayfabe and in like real life. Yeah.
And then I watched the semi-main, which is Tetsuya Endo, Will Cruz, and Ada defeating Kaito Kiyomiya, Galeno, and Alejandro. In Cruz won with the moonsault on Alejandro in 13-21, and this is all about setting it up. And so that match happened yesterday, but it will not be uploaded until this July 16th. So I'm sorry.
Yeah,
you'll have to wait for that review.
Yeah. Also, they broke, but apparently they broke the ring.
I want to see what happened here. I like Cruz. I liked him ever. Well, the first time I ever saw him was on the Noah UK show. So, but I think he was a good idea to bring in and everything like that. And I thought this was a little match to set this up. And then for the main event, it was Ozawa, Daga, Tadasuke, and Owada-san defeating Kenno, Kenta, Uka Sasaki, Deki, and Deki Odoshima in 16:04 with the backslide from Owada-san on Odoshima. Now, I said that I do not like these Team 2000 X six-mans, or I'm growing, or six and eight-man tags. I'm growing weary of them. I like this one better than the recent ones I've seen, because I thought that Odashima brought some juice to this, and I thought the finishing sequence with Owada-san was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I actually also really like the post-match, when it just started like brawling like crazy all over the place. I thought that added some, like, I think, like, much needed, like, oh, well, it really, like, expressed the heat that they've been building up on social media much more than, like, the other preview tag that they did. Like, there was, like that felt like there was some actual, like, hate there and everything. So, mm-hmm. which I feel like is appropriate if you're, like, trading extremely personal barbs with each other. So, I agree that, like, Odashima, like, added some much-needed energy to the match as well, where it's, like... Because Kendo and Kenta and Olka, like, I think they are a good trio, but, they kind of need, like, they need a lost post. They need someone like Daiki Odashima. Like, again, mm-hmm. that's the reason why, like, for example, Dragon Gate always has a lost post in their factions, because, like, it's a necessary guy... Because I think it makes the matches better as well, because you always have that, like, feeling of dread when they're, like, in the ring, right? Which you won't really have if you have, like, Ken Okenta and Olga Sasaki, who are all, like, pushed to some degree. So, I thought it just helped the match so much more. And I will say, I think, like, out of the Noah matches that we watched, I think this is, like, the best Noah match.
Yeah.
Out of this batch, basically. Like, I think it was better than anything on WrestleMagic.
I don't know if I'd go that far, but it was definitely up there. I'd give it maybe number two or three.
I mean, the only other one I would consider is the Lucha six man.
Yeah. That's how you got to do these things, because these Team 2000X multi-mans are getting dreadfully boring.
Yeah.
Going ahead, I think we already talked about the show on the 19th at Cork, and there's nothing more that was added except, you know, we got Naomichi Marufuji and Daiki Odashima versus Kenta and Junta Miyawaki, which I'm actually quite looking forward to. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's the main event is Kenta and Ozawa, and then Yohei and Hayata, and, you know, some Team 2000X versus All Rebellion. So Jack Morris is back, Tadasuke Owada-san, and X. Oh, I forgot.
Oh, yeah, we're going to have a new, yeah.
Versus Kaito Kiyomiya, Galeno, Hirotoki, and Alejandro. I don't really have any idea of who X is. For all we know, it's just someone on the roster that's turning. Mm-hmm. It's Go.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe. Or maybe it's someone completely new.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be opposed to that. Like, I hope it's not somebody turning again.
Could be a
random corner. What if it's Yuma and Sai?
Oh, God.
That's like the worst possible, like, thing that you could do, and he could do, yeah. Like, he's just like goes and joins Team 2000X for like a month and a half and then comes back to All Japan.
Yeah,
with Yoshitatsu.
So also Noah announced Wrestle Odyssey on Saturday, October 11th at Sumo Hall. And I saw someone say that they have opened up more tickets for this at the beginning of the sale period that they did for the last Sumo Hall show. So make of that what you will. But what do you think's happening on that show?
I mean, it probably have something big planned, right?
Yeah. I mean, well, given that the N1 is in September, that's got to be where the winner is challenging, right?
But is it part of the, like, regular Noah canon, or is it like...
Seems to be part of the regular Noah canon, but I'm not... completely sure about that.
Okay, yeah, because if it, you know, because if it's like a like WrestleMagic, right, where it's like a WrestleMagic show,
yeah,
which I don't know if they would, but then again, they have done GSC title matches on WrestleMagic before.
Yeah, so
it's not like that would be unprecedented.
So once the N1 ends on the September 23rd, the only show, there's four shows announced for October. Three of them are Monday Magic Extreme C, which is what the next one's called, which are all at Chiba, which is interesting.
And they're going to be all built around Hayata.
And then just the Wrestle Odyssey. So I don't know what's happening there.
Yeah. So, I mean, in that case, yeah, they have to have like a big, like, you can't run Sumo Hall without like a really big match. So they have to have something planned, especially if they are selling more like tickets. Like, so.
Yeah.
Could we see like another like return of like Nakamura on that one then?
Yeah, that's That would be a good spot for him for sure. Just an update on All Japan's Korakuen this Thursday, which is main evented by Seki Yoshioka versus Ryzen Kayato, and the tag title match is third from the top. Tickets don't seem to be selling that well.
Oh, no.
I thought that match placement was very interesting, too.
Yeah.
They basically, they punted this Korakuen because they decided to have the Triple Crown match in Osaka number 2, Eddie on 2.
Yeah. I mean, and also, like, you don't have Yuma Anzai on it, so that's probably, like, all of his fans aren't going to be there.
Yeah, yeah. So we'll see.
I mean, you basically, with, like, telling them Yuma Anzai isn't going to be there and, like, put, like, secondary match, like, you essentially told your fans to not go, almost.
Yeah,
you told them, it's like, yeah, this one is safe to skip.
Mm-hmm. So that almost brings us to the end of the show, but we have a big topic to talk about to finish the show on. Paul, we're going to talk about some great. it's been a while.
Yeah,
but they decided to put their 4th anniversary show free on YouTube because I have had no compulsion to pay for their streaming service.
No.
And they did this at Tokyo City Hall and Gallery Gotanda and drew 340 fans, which they said was a super no vacancy full house, but
probably sure.
Tokyo Dome City Hall anniversary show.
I mean, it's also like this is like announcing a super no vacancy full house in Yokohama Radiant Hall. Like, cool. Like, congratulations.
There's a lot to unpack in the show and its aftermath. But first, let's begin. You didn't see the show, did you?
No, I did not.
Okay. So I'll be quick because I don't have much to say about the undercard. So opening match, Al Linderman, Takanori Ito, and Minoru Tanaka defeated Somo Watanabe, Junji, and J.D. Lee in 12:54 with a German suplex hold from Linderman on Lee. Very solid opener. Okay. I thought it was good. I like all those guys. So then we go to the G Rush title, which I had never actually seen before because
nobody has.
Yeah. Except Mike Spears. Isao Mitsuka defeated Brass Knuckles June in 4:22 with the Hurricane Rana to make a 6th defense. And there was not much to this match. And my God, what they've done to June Tantra.
Yeah, Jesus Christ. That was like a guy I was like, man, I wonder like how this guy's career is going to go. And it went into the toilet is where it went.
Oh, yeah. And and then we got Kotaro Suzuki and Quiet Storm defeating Rocco Iwasaki and Kaichi Sato in 6:56 with the 53-centimeter arm lariat from Storm on Sato. Again, nothing to this match. And then we had the Triple Love Hawk with Kazuma Sakamoto versus Eminem Best Bros, which is Mason Mansoor, Balianaki, and Mei Tsuruga. And they defeated T-Hawk, Ryo Aitaka, Michiko, and Kazuma Sakamoto in 10:32 with the Dolphin Press from Tsuruga and Michiko. This was the comedy match, I suppose. Do you know Eminem was also working Big Japan?
No, I did see them on the DDT show, but...
Yeah.
To be fair, these two are like big wrestling fucking nerds.
Yeah.
So I'm not surprised if they basically are like, oh, we're just going to work all of the promotions. We don't even really give a shit, like, if you pay, like, how much you even pay us. We just kind of want to, like, you know what? I feel like this feels like genuinely they just want to do this.
Oh, for sure.
Because why the fuck else would you want to be like, yeah, we're going to work like Big Japan, you know?
They did. Oh, so July 3rd. Oh, this show is on Core, so you can watch it. I just didn't watch it. Yeah. But I might go back because it's like they defeated Akira and the MLW Akira and Mari Hana in 1334. Or 1337. So you can go back and watch that if you are so inclined to do so. But I thought that was kind of funny, though, at the same thing. Yeah, because three matches in Japan, DDT, Great, and then Big Japan.
See, but if they were real, if they were really wrestling nerds, they would have also read Kyushu Pro, and like Osaka. So really, they have to come back and do this again.
Yeah. Kyushu would seem like ideal for them.
Yeah.
And then G Pro Wrestling special tag match, Great in AAA, Shima, Alberto El Patron defeated Ryuchi Shaman Kawakami and Chris Weiss in 11:45, the cross-arm breaker from Patrona Kawakami. I'll give it better. It was better than G Rush match, I suppose. I don't know.
Wow, that's nuts.
It wasn't good, but also wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be, I guess.
How was Alberto's effort level here?
Not bad. you know.
Because I fully expect him like to come into Japan and work a show in front of 340 fans and just completely dog it.
No, I was kind of expecting that, but it was fine, right? Like nothing, no dogging, but like nothing spectacular or anything like that.
Fair enough. I don't want to hand it to Alberto El Patron, but God,
I
guess.
Well, I mean, he might be the biggest babyface in Mexico right now.
Christ.
you saw that though, right?
Yeah, I saw the match where it's like, yeah, no, it sure seems to be going well.
Behind him.
Yeah, no, I saw the Triple A, like when he had the match with Vikingo, where like he like turned into like the biggest babyface because the crowd hates Vikingo now.
Right. Yeah. oh, I forgot to mention, did you see the Itamura match in NXT? Because I didn't get
yes, actually I did.
Okay, well, we'll say the final thing then.
Yeah, say, do it after, yeah.
So the show finally picks up though. G-Infinity title, Takahiro Yamamura and Issei Onitsuka defeated Tetsuya Izuchi and So Daimaji in 2034 with the Tamashii no Shooting Star Press from Onitsuka on Izuchi to make their second defense of the titles. And Paul, I would go second best match of the show. Very good, fast-paced action. Maybe a little long, but you know, all of these four guys are really great.
I mean,
I'll be seeing later. Fine. We'll get to that later.
Yeah, but I will just really say, just real quick, very selfish of Onitsuka to like get the win and keep the titles in his retirement match.
Yes. So, yeah, I mean, I was like, okay, so this company can be pretty good, I thought, after seeing this match. Yeah. You know, if you watch the top two matches of this, it's fine. That's all you need to do. And then in the main event for the G-Rex title, and yeah, it was just the G-Rex on the line, but even though Nakajima, also the Lidette UWR champion, Kazuhiko Nakajima defeated Kaito Ishii in 23:17 with the Northern Lights bomb to win the G-Rex title. This was really great, actually.
God damn it.
I went
for, so I have to watch it. Fuck.
Should. They kicked the shit out of each other, not surprisingly, with these two guys and everything like that. They, finishing stretch, they kind of battled over like getting each other into a Northern Lights bomb. But then Nakajima ultimately won that and won the title. He still got it.
Yeah, I mean, the wrestling was never his issue. That's the problem.
No, I know.
The in-ring work was never the problem why he like is where he fucking is now.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's still plenty of promotions in Japan that would like to have a worker at the level of Katsuhiko Nakajima on their roster. And probably would also want to like push him to a decent degree as well. Just,
well,
says more about him that, you know, he isn't there.
Yeah.
And somehow, not the most controversial person in great anymore. Or
so what do I have to say on this about the show? Well, the top two matches were great. Nakajima's still great. Ishida's still great. I have to give him credit too, because he was good in the main event. But oh, that undercard.
Yeah, that looks rough.
But wait, there's more.
Yeah. So much more. Some of only half done with great.
after the show, was pretty quick, right?
Yes. Yeah, because he was already gone by like the next show, yeah.
Issei Onitsuka is retired. Because he was gonna be suspended for a year, but then he just chose retirement. He's stripped of both of his titles, the G Rush and the G Infinity. And some people are very angry at him, but we don't know, and I have no clue what to speculate about because I don't want to speculate. Although talking to the enemy has been speculated, although something worse has been as well, which I don't know, but you know. Although I took the line about the criminal investigation as more of a legal violation of contract.
That's more of the
very
thing,
criminal. All right. So people, I think, jumped to conclusions on that. I think it was more like litigious stuff than like true criminal activity type thing.
Yeah. And it might also be, again, a thing of like, it's always hard to translate that into Japan, because I think generally if you want to like basically terminate someone's contract, you do need to do an investigation before you do that. But that could be for like anything they've done. Like it doesn't have to be like an actual crime.
Right. Also, they were just going to suspend him for a year, but he chose retirement instead.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which I don't think he's going to stay retired, because he could probably be able to be contractless within less than a year.
That's this promotion isn't making it to its fifth anniversary, right? Like, there's no way.
No, I can't believe it. Well, it's got to be a money pit already, and I don't understand this. Although I got to say, what's the Ledet guy's name? Because he is quite the optimist. or has been at least in the past.
Something Suzuki.
Yeah, I thought it was Suzuki. He's quite the optimist, but he's burning a lot of money on.
Yeah. And there's only so much you can, like, you know, like counteract that with your bar business or whatever.
It sounds like Shima's going free.
Yeah, that's the that's the actual death knell for this promotion. Like, that's just it. Like, it's over, basically, is what I'm saying. Because this promotion never really developed a fan base of its own, right? Like, the only people that were still going to those shows, and it was less and less every single time, were, like, Shima fans. Like, that's the people that were going to these shows, for, like, fans of Shima. And if he's leaving, then, like, this promotion is just fucking dead. Yeah. Dead as a doornail.
We don't know what the rest of Stronghearts, or, well, Stronghearts doesn't exist anymore, but we don't know what Lindemann is, do we?
I mean, T-Hawk, at least, was tweeting out a bunch of, like, pro-company things.
But that,
like,
was
after the Onitsuka thing, who knows? And then who knows if the Shima leaving is that's related to whatever was going on with Onitsuka. Like, I don't know. Like, it's just an incredibly, like, weird-ass situation. I mean, but, like, who the fuck do they even have anymore now?
Well, to be fair, if they're getting Shima's contracts off the book, they might be able to go a few more months.
I mean, maybe, but, like I mean, who do they even have left on their roster anymore? Right? Because Hayato Tamura has got, like, is out. Suma Watanabe is Yuizuka? Out as well.
Sorry, no, Yuizuka is gone. Watanabe was on the show.
Oh, for some reason, I always confused them. Yeah, so, you know, like, half of the, like, guys they wanted to build around are gone.
Yeah.
I mean, you have your belt. Now you have both belts on Nakajima. I mean, that's also the clearest sign that, like, the dead UWF thing is also probably dead now, right? If you just have, like, one guy hold both belts, it's, like, the way you kind of quietly get rid of that.
I don't know. I think, you know what? I feel like did they say they're going to do Lindemann versus Nakajima? Am I dreaming that up?
I don't know. I know they just did. Well, they wanted to do Onitsuka versus Nakajima. And then they had to literally pivot that to Shima versus Nakajima. Because Onitsuka retired.
Right.
And then Shima left now as well. I guess maybe Lindemann makes sense. But, like, he lost in the opener of that show. So.
Oh, Ledet. Okay, so here we are. August 9th, Ledet UWF version 6. They're doing Ledet UWF rules, Nakajima.
Sure, why not?
So, I don't know. They had a Shima 20th anniversary show on August 24th. He might still work that show.
I mean, it's kind of pointless to even hold this show otherwise. I mean, it's just freelance, right? Like, it's not like he has fully left. But, like, him... I mean, again, it will just mean that he will work significantly less shows, which I always thought that, like, at least Great would last until they do, like, a big Shima retirement show.
Yeah.
And then basically they use that as, like, the exit thing of, like, okay, Shima retired, and that's basically, like, the peak we're ever going to get to, and then you can fold it off afterwards. But now they're not even going to get that, because now he's a freelancer. He's going to, like, shop that show around, like Muto did, basically.
Well, they're doing a show at Yokohama Buntai on November 3rd.
Yeah, that's... I mean, somebody has to, like, set the, like, record for, like, least tickets sold, right?
Listen to this. It's going to have Ledet UWF and Great MMA on it as well.
Oh, yeah, that's what everybody's clamoring for. It's Great MMA because it's so well-beloved. Everybody loves Great MMA.
So, Paul, what is your... Okay, so we are now on Great Death Watch. Yeah. What is your timeline on this?
So my thinking is... I'm thinking they're getting to the year end. I think the last show is going to be, like, the year end show.
Yeah.
Because, like, just based on how far in advance you have to book buildings in Japan, right?
They don't have anything announced past that November show at Buntai.
Oh, you're thinking that one's the final one?
No, but they might do the Christmas show or year end show.
Yeah, because I feel like they have at least have, like, Tokyo Dome City Hall or something booked for that. So they have to do that show because they already paid for the building. Which, I mean, I will go if that show happens. I will be there. Probably will have an easy time getting tickets. So that's nice.
Yes, you'll have a great choice of seats for that one.
Hey, I mean, maybe I will actually, like, sit, like, all the way on, like, the floor there. Which that might be, like, again, hey, I mean, who else can say that they've been to like the last row of a promotion, right? Like I've only ever made it to like second to last row of a promotion because I was like at the second to last show of like Cork City Wrestling. So I can say I will be at the last great show.
I guess to go back to Shima for a second, I don't know where this guy's going to work.
Yeah, because like the relation, I mean, never say never in wrestling, right? But it still seems like the relationship with Dragon Gate is just utterly and completely poisoned.
Oh, well, it took Ultimo almost 20 years.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. You know, like never say never for me is more in a time frame of like maybe he'll pop back up there in like 15 years or so. Like I don't think, I think there's a 0% chance he goes there now. But then where does he even go? Like the reason he ended up in Great in the first place was because there wasn't really anything else for him.
Wrestle One dead.
Yeah.
You don't think at this point with Shima, there's no point in All Japan spiking their renewed relationship with Dragon Gate.
No. Also, B, remember that like last time he was in All Japan, it's not like he left a good impression either when he refused to drop to Akira Francesco.
Right. So we think.
It is a suspicion, but like, I mean, the signs are pretty fucking obvious.
New Japan, I don't think he's just old.
Yeah, no, there's no value. Well, what would they even want with him, you know?
Noah, I don't know, but it seems they still have a relationship with Dragon Gate.
Yes, exactly. Like, there's too many, like, Dragon Gate people on there. I don't think it's even the Dragon Gate relationship. Ada is to me is the guy that's stopping that.
Okay, there you go.
Because Ada literally refused to leave with Shima. I think Ada fucking hates Shima. Like, there's no way he allows him to like come in. Like, if Shima comes in, Ada's fucking gone, and Ada's on a contract, so Noah's gonna pick him.
So you're left with Shima produce shows at Shinkiba.
Yeah, basic Big Japan.
And Big Japan, and. Would he touch him?
Maybe.
But that DDT great thing stopped too.
Yeah. That's like out of like any kind of reasonably sized promotion. That's like the only Kyushu Pro.
Yeah. I mean, he might just want to do his retirement show.
Yeah. If I'm Shima, like he's fucking washed too. So I feel like that's why I feel like he's leaving now, because I think he's going to shop around his retirement show. And see if he can get some money, Mark, to do it.
Yeah. It's interesting. Because remember we did the great draft?
Yeah. And who goes where?
We might be totally headlong into this, right? But when we did that, I don't think Nakajima had shown up yet. Or he had just shown up.
I think that was just before he showed up, yeah.
Yeah. So what happens to him?
I think he might be in a worse position than Nakajima, than Shima, actually. Because, I mean, to be honest, I feel like with him, if he would show contrition, I feel like if he could actually convince somebody that he's, like, gonna be on his best behavior, maybe there's a chance Noah takes him back. I don't think All Japan will be, because for them it's just the risk-reward that isn't there. Right, because they can't afford getting sued, which is what almost happened to them last time.
I guess it depends how much. If I were All Japan, I'd take him back if he showed some contrition.
Yeah, I mean, given how much business, you know, Nakajima versus Kento would do again.
Him popping back up again in All Japan, there's so much juice in that with both Kento and Anzai.
But like the very first thing I'm doing is I'm like having Kento beat him. immediately. Just like, we need to, like, that boy needs his win. Like, you.
If Great goes under, do you think Hayato Tamura and Yuzuka will suddenly become healthy?
Yes. Yuzuka, I'm not sure. Hayato Tamura, I feel like, is literally selling out his contract. Like, he's probably banged up, but every wrestler is banged up. Every wrestler is always banged up. I feel like he is just kind of like, oh, this promotion is so fucked. There's no point in me like sacrificing my body. I'm just kind of gonna like heal up, train a bit, and then come back whenever my contract expires, and then go to like.
You know, it's
wherever.
Funny because also on the topic of when we did the great draft, I feel like since then a few people have like lowered their stock.
Yeah, Kawakami, Jun Tonsho.
Yeah, for sure. Kawakami's weird because he's like. in that mid to late 30s age is like, you know,
yeah,
it's worth it.
I feel like he's at least a guy you can, if he comes cheap, he's a guy I would put on my roster because he's solid enough, you know?
Yeah, oh, for sure, yeah. Takanori Ito just hasn't done anything. Soma,
no,
hasn't done anything. They never pulled the trigger really on Soma.
I mean, they did give him that title reign and then ended it in 6 days, so.
I think Junji has really stepped up, especially since he ditched the original gimmick.
Yeah.
Which was goofy. And then,
Yamamura is great, but like he's such a like risk to take on.
Although he's held together so far.
Yeah, but again, he nearly died twice.
Yeah, he's still really good too. That's the thing.
That's the thing. Yeah.
Look, if all of Onitsuka was doing was talking to someone else.
Yeah, if all he did was like I don't know, talk to like some member of the Drag Kid roster, I don't know.
Or even if it was contract tampering, whatever is great.
He gives a shit.
He's still great.
Kaito Ishida is absolute. I think Kaito Ishida is going to land somewhere for sure.
If I'm All Japan, I'm looking at Ishida.
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
Even Noah.
Yeah.
I guess it depends on who will give him a job.
I mean, it also like depends if he's fine with just being a junior as well.
Yeah. Well, he wasn't. He did that one title challenge in All Japan.
Yeah.
I think, though, he did get the main event running great.
Mm.
Yeah, that remains to be seen, but we can officially go on the Great Death Watch. I think that's fair to say.
Yeah. I think T-Hawk might be fucked. Like, I know that All Japan pushed him, but like I've heard that T-Hawk is like an asshole, basically, and nobody likes him.
Mm. Yeah. New Japan might take Lindemann?
Maybe. Yeah. But I also feel like if they really wanted him, they would have poached him already.
Yeah, that's the thing. Not looking good.
No.
So.
I feel like, okay, some people will fall. I don't think all of them will fall through the cracks. And I mean, it's still not sure, you know, if this whole, like, if like Tranquilo Pro or whatever is actually like real. But I think if that becomes a real, you know?
People are just willing that into
existence. Yeah.
Yeah.
But if that becomes a real promotion, I think like a lot of these guys will go there.
People were speculating that Shun Skywalker was going to join Tranquilo Pro.
Oh, no. I mean, that was just...
Because
he
had
a... Turns out Shun
gimmick.
Fucking worked everybody really well on that one.
And then people were saying Anzai, and we already talked about what Anzai's probably...
Yeah, no, yeah. It's
so
like,
this
literally,
is all
he said he was going to come back. Yeah.
This is all pure... Yeah, he clearly... I should forgot to mention that. In that interview, Anzai was like, no, I'm coming back, right? So,
yeah.
Which is why I think it was a movie, TV, whatever. So, yeah, the Tranquilo Pro is pure just projection. Sorry to say.
Yeah. Now, watch it get announced like in between us recording and like uploading the episode or like 5 minutes after it gets uploaded. Like, yeah, we're running like a full schedule and we're running like Sumo Hall in September or whatever.
I suppose it's not impossible. I just think a lot of it is, right?
Yeah.
So, that is our Great Death Watch. We'll have to lean into this and do the updates. Is like, is Great dead yet?
Who knows? It might go real. It might be dead by the next time we record.
Nah, they probably make it to the end of the year.
I do think so too.
Look, wrestling attracts a lot of people that are willing to burn a lot of money. I just can't think it lasts.
Yeah, no, it was that was always obvious. And when it became, I think it became basically non-viable when that Sumo Hall show just bombed completely. When that first like version mega show, right? When they brought, when they tried their hardest, they brought, like, again, you have to remember that was Ibushi's first match back in Japan and it did horrific business. And I think at that point it was clear that Great was just never, ever going to be like a viable promotion.
Yeah, I agree. So. Oh, well, can I add that one to the pile?
Mm-hmm.
And yeah,
to be fair, I will say it lasted longer than I thought it would.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe
they've been around for, I mean, they started out in the middle of the, for a promotion, it started out in the middle of the pandemic.
Yeah. I mean, Wrestle 1 lasted 7.
Yeah. So it's going to last
just
like
under
5.
7. Yeah. But Big Japan will still be doing shows.
Yeah.
You can look forward to that. I am convinced that they are not going out of business anytime.
Big Japan. I mean, they are a cockroach. The one thing that will give me pause is the fact that Sekimoto, them losing the income of the Sekimoto, like, bookings, is that's going to hurt them.
All right. So, final topic, Paul, take it away.
Yeah, so Inamura losing to Obafemi in NXT. So I only watched that one. I didn't watch the rest of the.
I would hope not.
Because fuck watching NXT. So the match overall, I thought it was fine. I actually kind of like Obafemi. Again, I don't watch NXT, so wasn't really super familiar with him. But I think he has like good. I think he has good like aura and everything. Good look, obviously. I mean, he's in WWE, so like he gets like fed well and everything. So I thought that was really good. I thought the match was pretty decent as well. Like Inamura, I think to me he's clearly the better worker, but I mean, obviously he is. He has much more experience than Femi does. But I think Femi actually like held his own. Like it's not like he like got like completely outworked here. And I thought actually like his like transitions and everything were really, really smooth. So overall it was a really, really solid match. Like I'm not gonna like go and say like it's like a match of the year contender or whatever, or like give it a rating. Because it's definitely under 4. And it was also dragged down by the fact that they had to like put in like, obviously had to put in like North American like bullshit. Because Josh Briggs was at ringside and basically they did the thing where like basically now like Inamura is a face and Briggs is a heel. So they did the thing where like Briggs like behind Inamura's back, he like hit Obafemi with the title belt, and then Inamura just kind of like sees like Obafemi on the ground and he like goes up for like a splash, and then he like sees like Briggs holding like the title belt and everything, and he's like, oh no, as the valiant babyface now I cannot like do my move, I need to argue with my partner instead. And then he kind of like lost the match from there. So that very much dragged it down for me. Like otherwise, like incredibly solid match. Like I actually enjoyed it. Like even like the whole like WWE production and everything wasn't annoying here, because it was like in a really small venue, right? Like it was like in like center stage. So it really was only like, yeah, I mean like basically it was like a Osaka show, like an Indian show in the smaller one, right? That's kind of similar size crowd. I thought commentary wasn't as annoying, and I think because it was such a small venue, they didn't do, at least not for this match, not that I noticed at least, they didn't do the like really obvious like crowd sweetening, and the crowd actually was like into the match as well, so that helped it as well. So overall I enjoyed it. I don't think it's something you need to go out of your way to like watch, but also if you do watch it, like you're not gonna waste your time either.
Okay, so that's interesting. Do you think though, Inamura is going to be doing anything else, or is it definitely like?
I think he's got the end point is going to be like him versus Briggs.
Right.
Like, they kind of set that up here because they like argued after the match and everything. So like, I feel like that's very obviously going to be like the end point. Like he's going to have a match with Briggs, lose, and then I think he's going to be back. But I mean, you can do that pretty quickly. So I actually wouldn't be shocked if he's back for the N1.
Yeah, no, I would expect that. They really need him in that.
Yeah.
Using the Noah talent and a couple of foreigners, it could get dicey with the quality. I don't know. Depending on who they bring in. But I really hope it's time to bring him back.
Because it doesn't look like he's like signing with like WWE or anything like that.
No, they're not going to push him above what they just did.
Yeah.
Right. That's the peak type thing. So that is everything. So we covered some other things that we don't usually do. It was fun. I'm sort of enjoying watching more other things in a variety, even if it's not always good. Sometimes it's fun to watch the world burn.
Yeah.
In the case of great. Paul, I think we should come back next week, actually, because we'll have the big Noah Corkin, and we got 3 All Japan shows between now and next Monday, including a tag title match in the Triple Crown.
Plus and
the Junior Battle of Glory.
Exactly. Yeah.
So that'll be more than enough. So we will talk to you next week, and enjoy all the wrestling out there. Bye.
My name is Tyler Fornes, and I am one of the co-hosts of The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy AEW podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. We take a broad scope approach to the world of All Elite Wrestling and the entire universe of Tony Khan. We talk about the big matches, the big stars, the promos, the storylines, And we also look at it from a big picture perspective. How are things going to change over the course of the next 10 years with AEW still in the picture? How are companies like WWE going to adapt and adjust to AEW? Are they going to be a similar way like they did with WCW in the late 1990s? Will there be a counterpunch? We talk about all of that and more on The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy every week on the Voices of Wrestling Network.
Hi, I'm Case Lowe, co-host of the Open the Voice Gate podcast. The one question I'm constantly asked when it comes to Dragon Gate is, how do I get into the promotion? Well, stop asking and start listening to the Open the Voice Gate podcast, released every Wednesday on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. For exclusive news and show reviews, look no further than the leader in Dragon Gate coverage, Open the Voice Gate.